Topic 43. Stay safe out there. In his poem, Mending Wall, Robert Frost said, "Good fences make good neighbors." In the first edition's discussion of code coupling, we made a bold and naive statement. We said, "We don't need to be as paranoid as spies or dissidents." We were wrong. In fact, you do need to be that paranoid every day. As we write this, the daily news is filled with stories of devastating data breaches, hijacked systems, and cyber fraud. Hundreds of millions of records stolen at once, billions and billions of dollars in losses and remediation, and these numbers are growing rapidly each year. In the vast majority of cases, it's not because the attackers were terribly clever or even vaguely competent. It's because the developers were careless. The other 90%. When coding, you may go through several cycles of, "It works," and, "Why isn't that working?" with the occasional, "There's no way that could have happened." After several hills and bumps on this uphill climb, it's easy to say to yourself, "Phew, it all works," and proclaim the code done. Of course, it's not done yet. You're 90% done, but now you have the other 90% to consider. The next thing you have to do is analyze the code for ways it can go wrong and add those to your test suite. You'll consider things such as passing in bad parameters, leaking or unavailable resources, that sort of thing. In the good old days, this evaluation of internal errors may have been sufficient. But today, that's only the beginning, because in addition to errors from internal causes, you need to consider how an external actor could deliberately screw up the system. But perhaps you protest, "Oh, no one will care about this code, it's not important, no one even knows about this server." It's a big world out there, and most of it is connected. Whether it's a bored kid on the other side of the planet, state-sponsored terrorism, criminal gangs, corporate espionage, or even a vengeful ex, they are out there and aiming for you. The survival time of an unpatched, outdated system on the open net is measured in minutes, or even less. Security through obscurity just doesn't work. Security. Basic principles. Pragmatic programmers have a healthy amount of paranoia. We know we have faults and limitations, and that external attackers will seize on any opening we leave to compromise our systems. Your particular development and deployment environments will have their own security-centric needs, but there are a handful of basic principles that you should always bear in mind. 1. Minimize attack surface area. 2. Design with the principle of least privilege. 3. Use secure defaults. 4. Encrypt sensitive data. And 5. Maintain security updates. Let's take a look at each of these. Minimize attack surface area. The attack surface area of a system is the sum of all access points where an attacker can enter data, extract data, or invoke execution of a service. Here are a few examples. Code complexity makes the attack surface larger, with more opportunities for unanticipated side effects. Think of complex code as making the surface area more porous and open to infection. Once again, simple, smaller code is better. Less code means fewer bugs, fewer opportunities for a crippling security hole. Simpler, tighter, less complex code is easier to reason about, easier to spot potential weaknesses. Input data is an attack vector. Never trust data from an external entity. Always sanitize it before passing it on to a database, view rendering, or other processing. Some languages can help with this. In Ruby, for example, variables holding external input are tainted, which limits what operations can be performed on them. Unauthenticated services are an attack vector. By their very nature, any user anywhere in the world can call unauthenticated services. So, barring any other handling or limiting, you've immediately created an opportunity for a denial-of-service attack at the very least. Quite a few of highly public data breaches recently were caused by developers accidentally putting data in unauthenticated, publicly readable data stores in the cloud. Authenticated services are an attack vector. Keep the number of authorized users at an absolute minimum. Cull unused, old, or outdated users and services. Many net-enabled devices have been found to contain simple default passwords or unused, unprotected administrative accounts. If an account with deployment credentials is compromised, your entire product is compromised. Output data is an attack vector. There's a possibly apocryphal story about a system that dutifully reported the error message, "Password is used by another user." Don't give away information. Make sure that the data you report is appropriate for the authorization of that user. Truncate or obfuscate potentially risky information such as Social Security or other government ID numbers. Debugging info is an attack vector. There's nothing as heartwarming as seeing a full stack trace with data on your local ATM machine, an airport kiosk, or a crashing web page. Information designed to make debugging easier can make breaking in easier as well. Make sure any test window and runtime exception reporting is protected from prying eyes. This technique has proven to be successful at the CPU chip level, where well-known exploits target debugging and administrative facilities. Once cracked, the entire machine is left exposed. Tip 72. Keep it simple and minimize attack surfaces. Principle of least privilege. Another key principle is to use the least amount of privilege for the shortest time you can get away with. In other words, don't automatically grab the highest permission level, such as root or administrator. If that high level is needed, take it. Do the minimum amount of work and relinquish your permission quickly to reduce the risk. This principle dates back to the early 1970s. Every program and every privileged user of the system should operate using the least amount of privilege necessary to complete the job. That's Jerome Saltzer in Communications of the ACM, 1974. Take the login program on Unix-derived systems. It initially executes with root privileges. As soon as it finishes authenticating the correct user, though, it drops the high-level privilege to that of the user. This doesn't just apply to operating system privilege levels. Does your application implement different levels of access? Is it a blunt tool, such as administrator versus user? If so, consider something more finely grained, where your sensitive resources are partitioned into different categories, and individual users have permissions for only certain of those categories. This technique follows the same sort of idea as minimizing surface area, reducing the scope of attack vectors both by time and by privilege level. In this case, less is indeed more. Secure defaults. The default settings on your app, or for your users on your site, should be the most secure values. These might not be the most user-friendly or convenient values, but it's better to let each individual decide for themselves the trade-offs between security and convenience. For example, the default for password entry might be to hide the password as entered, replacing each character with an asterisk. If you're entering a password in a crowded public place, or projected before a large audience, that's a sensible default. But some users might want to see the password spelled out, perhaps for accessibility. If there's little risk someone is looking over their shoulder, that's a reasonable choice for them. Encrypt sensitive data. Don't leave personally identifiable information, financial data, passwords, or other credentials, in plain text, whether in a database or some other external file. If the data gets exposed, encryption offers an additional level of safety. In version control, we strongly recommend putting everything needed for the project under version control. Well, almost everything. Here's one major exception to that rule. Don't check in secrets, API keys, SSH keys, encryption passwords, or other credentials alongside your source code in version control. Keys and secrets need to be managed separately, generally via config files or environment variables as part of build and deployment. Maintain security updates. Updating computer systems can be a huge pain. You need that security patch, but as a side effect, it breaks some portion of your application. You could decide to wait and defer the update until later. That's a terrible idea, because now your system is vulnerable to a known exploit. Tip 73. Apply security patches quickly. This tip affects every net-connected device, including phones, cars, appliances, personal laptops, developer machines, build machines, production servers, and cloud images. Everything. And if you think that this doesn't really matter, just remember that the largest data breaches in history, so far, were caused by systems that were behind on their updates. Don't let it happen to you. While we're talking about security, here's a quick rant about password anti-patterns. One of the fundamental problems with security is that oftentimes good security runs counter to common sense or common practice. For example, you might think that strict password requirements would increase security for your application or site. You'd be wrong. Strict password policies will actually lower your security. Here's a short list of very bad ideas, along with some recommendations from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Do not restrict password length to less than 64 characters. NIST recommends 256 as a good maximum length. Do not truncate the user's chosen password. Do not restrict special characters, like the ones you get when you hit Shift and a number key. If special characters in your password will compromise your system, you have bigger problems. The NIST says to accept all printing ASCII characters, space, and Unicode. Do not provide password hints to unauthenticated users, or prompt for specific types of information, like, what was the name of your first pet? Do not disable the paste function in the browser. Crippling the functionality of the browser and password managers does not make your system more secure. In fact, it drives users to create simpler, shorter passwords that are much easier to compromise. Both the NIST in the US and the National Cybersecurity Center in the UK specifically require verifiers to allow paste functionality for this reason. Do not impose other composition rules. For example, do not mandate any particular mix of upper and lowercase, numerics, or special characters, or prohibit repeating characters, and so on. Do not arbitrarily require users to change their passwords after some length of time. Only do this for a valid reason, for example, if there has been a breach. You want to encourage long, random passwords with a high degree of entropy. Putting artificial constraints limits entropy and encourages bad password habits, leaving your users' accounts vulnerable to takeover. Common sense versus crypto. It's important to keep in mind that common sense may fail you when it comes to matters of cryptography. The first and most important rule when it comes to crypto is never do it yourself. As you just heard, even for something as simple as passwords, common practices are wrong-headed. Once you get into the world of crypto, even the tiniest, most insignificant-looking error can compromise everything. Your clever, new, homemade encryption algorithm can probably be broken by an expert in minutes. You don't want to do encryption yourself. As we've said elsewhere, rely only on reliable things. Well-vetted, thoroughly examined, well-maintained, frequently updated, preferably open-source libraries and frameworks. Beyond simple encryption tasks, take a hard look at other security-related features of your site or application. Take authentication, for instance. In order to implement your own login with password or biometric authentication, you need to understand how hashes and salts work, how crackers use things like rainbow tables, why you shouldn't use MD5 or SHA-1, and a host of other concerns. And even if you get all that right, at the end of the day, you're still responsible for holding onto the data and keeping it secure, subject to whatever new legislation and legal obligations come up. Or you could take the pragmatic approach and let someone else worry about it and use a third-party authentication provider. This may be an off-the-shelf service you run in-house, or it could be a third-party in the cloud. Authentication services are often available from email, phone, or social media providers, which may or may not be appropriate for your application. In any case, these folks spend all their days keeping their system secure, and they're better at it than you are. Stay safe out there.